The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We made it to a Friday. Yay! You get a vote, and you get a vote, and you get a vote. Yes, Oprah was in the house yesterday, and she's giving everyone a vote. Actually, she can't give everyone a vote, but I'll tell you what happened today. Just moments ago in Georgia, a federal judge ruled that Georgia's exact match rules for voter registration will not apply for next week's midterm. So allowing people who have seen their voter registration held up to vote in Georgia. The exact match law used by Georgia's Secretary of State, the guy who's trying to steal the election, Brian Kemp, his office, it marks an applicant's registration is pending if the personal information on their voter registration form doesn't exactly match the information on the state's Department of Driver Services or the Social Security Administration. But the bottom line is a judge threw out Georgia's exact match rules for this year's election, making Oprah's visit to Georgia to campaign for Stacey Abrams that much more potent. Speaking of Oprah for Stacey Abrams, someone else took notice of it.
There's big election news already because today Oprah hit the campaign trail for Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. What did I say? And look, and this is not easy. There's a sacrifice here. To take this partisan political stand, Oprah is leaving 60 Minutes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what
that means? She's out of a job. How's she going to pay her bills? We got to set up a GoFundMe, okay?
Yeah, she's going to need some help.
She can fund us. Of course, anytime Oprah gets political, everyone wants to know one thing.
I want to make it very clear to all the press, everybody, I'm not here because I'm making some grandstand because I'm thinking about running myself.
Thank God.
I don't want to run.
Good.
Okay?
She's running. She's totally right. 100%. 100%.
Right now,
instead, Oprah said she was there to get out the vote. All of the vote.
Only when we unite as sisters, and I don't just mean sisters, I mean sisters. Black sisters, brown sisters, white sisters, Asian sisters, LGBTQ sisters.
The Pointer Sisters, Twisted Sisters, the Brothers Karamazov, the Olsen Twins. Just go vote.
Please.
Just go.
Please.
Kissing Cousins. And if you're thinking of staying home on Election Day, Oprah is having none of it.
For anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, and you are choosing not to vote wherever you are in this state, in this country, you are dishonoring your family.
Got that right.
You are disrespecting and disregarding their legacy, their suffering, and their dreams.
Wow. I've heard of families guilt-tripping you, but only Oprah can make a family guilt-trip you from beyond the grave.
There you go.
But Abrams' opponent, Brian Kemp, is fighting back against Winfrey with who many have called the white male, not Oprah, Mike Pence. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We might actually finally learn a few of Mike Pence's favorite things.
Oh, no.
I'm going to guess milk mother and hypnotizing gay people. And Oprah's not the only celebrity who's been in Georgia stumping for Abrams. So is Will Ferrell. And the vice president had a message for those out-of-touch showbiz elites.
I'd like to remind Stacey and Oprah and Will Ferrell, I'm kind of a big deal, too. I got a message for all Stacey Abrams' liberal Hollywood friends.
Oh, yeah?
This ain't Hollywood. This is Georgia.
This ain't Hollywood, Oprah. We don't cotton to big city billionaires who are also TV stars taken from me, Vice President to Donald Trump.
Oh, Stephen Colbert. Yep, bringing the funny. And he's doing it again, you know. I would have thought that he would have learned his lesson after doing a live late night show on election night in 2016. That was like, you know, you could see it as the night went on and it became more and more apparent that Donald Trump was inexplicably going to win. They were not prepared for that. You know, they did a live show. I'm sure they had lots of preparation for a lot of different outcomes of different races. I don't think they were prepared for Donald Trump to win. This time, the forecasts are a little better, and we wish for a different outcome. There will be one. Anyway, welcome to the Friday show. There's a lot going on. My friend Sally Cohn is here today, and I got to tell you, she's got a new book out. It's called The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. And I've had this book for a while, and I was going to have Sally on back in the spring. Sorry about that. That's my ringtone. Somebody's calling me now. They should know better than that. Anyway, I was going to have her on, you know, in the spring before the summer, and our scheduling got mixed up, and she went away for the summer. So this book sat in my living room on the table right next to my side of the couch for about a month. And then I realized, well, summer's ending. I should start reading the book because I got to get Sally on the show. And so I did. I was knee deep in this book last week when the fucking world was falling apart. I was knee deep in this book when we started hearing about the bombs that were sent in the mail. And throughout the few days that we lived with that going on, more and more it was apparent that these bombs were going to critics of Donald Trump and prominent Democrats, people that Trump has targeted for some of his vitriol in the past. Those were who were getting these bombs. There were bombs of hate. Not that there are bombs of love, but that would be nice, a love bomb where you set it off and it sprays confetti or something. I don't know. Then, of course, there was the shooting in Kentucky where two people were killed after the gunman tried to go into a black church and I guess was rebuffed. He went out and he wound up killing two black people in a shooting that was racially motivated. And then, of course, the massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. I was just getting to the end of this book when that happened. And all I could think is there's a lot of hate in this world. And I harbor much of it. I hate those people. That shooter that went into that temple, I hate that person. The guy who sent the bombs, I hate that person. And I'm wondering, is there anything wrong with that? I hate Donald Trump. I hate Donald Trump with the heat of 1,000 burning suns. There's nothing that I could say that would allow me to verbalize the extent of my hatred for Donald Trump. So it's a good time to talk to Sally Cohn because actually I think it's kind of healthy. It gets my hatred out. I don't let it simmer inside me. If I saw Trump, I'd probably say something to his face and get myself arrested. You know, fun story. We were to dinner a few years ago. This is going back a number of years. We went to Joe Stone Crab in Miami and we're outside afterwards, about to walk to our car because we didn't valet park. The restaurant's expensive enough where we'd be pinching pennies for months after eating there. But again, this was a few years ago when we actually had some money. But anyway, so we walk outside and there by the valet parking, there's a guy and I turned to David, who at the time was not yet my husband. And I said, that looks like Bill O'Reilly. And I thought it couldn't because this guy was really tall. Little did I know that Bill O'Reilly is really tall because David said to me, that is Bill O'Reilly. And I'm like, I got to say something. And he says, no. He like physically grabbed my shoulders and started walking me towards the car. So I didn't say anything to Bill O'Reilly because I probably would have gotten us arrested and that wouldn't have been a good thing. Anyway, the thing I'm getting at is there aren't many people I hate, but there are some. And those that I hate, I really think are evil. In terms of the big picture, I think these people are evil. So anyway, reading Sally's book, she meets people along the way. She goes to Palestine and Israel, where people have been fighting, where hatred runs deep for centuries, and found that where you would expect hatred, oftentimes there wasn't any. She went to Rwanda and spoke with somebody who was the victim of the genocide. His entire family was slaughtered. And you would think if anyone's going to feel hatred, it's this man. And instead, we learn a lot about love from him. So it'll be an interesting conversation with Sally Cohn, who I don't think Sally hates anyone. You meet her. She's just a nice person. Yeah, she's one of those people always smiling. We'll see if we can wipe that smile off of her face, okay? But before we get to Sally and all that, there's a lot of news going on. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, I already told you about the first bit of breaking news, that a federal judge ruled today that Georgia's exact match rules for voter registration will not apply for Tuesday's midterm elections, allowing people who have seen their voter registration held up to vote. So, yes, good news. All right. We're starting with more good news. There was a tweet a few minutes ago from David Farenthold of the Washington Post, who wrote, breaking, federal judge denies Donald Trump's attempt to stop discovery process in emoluments clause lawsuit by D.C. Maryland attorneys general. Will allow attorneys general to get documents showing foreign government customers at Trump Hotel. In D.C., story coming soon. Ooh. So Trump tried to get this emoluments lawsuit dismissed, and a federal judge said, in your dreams, stay tuned. I love that. There's more. Back into the meat of the that's all the good news I have for you. The Washington Post, the fact checkers there have been working overtime in the last few days of the 2018 campaign season, and they found, brace yourself for this because this is big, they found that Donald Trump has been lying even more than he usually does. In the first 9 months of his presidency, that would be presidency, Trump made 1,318 false or misleading claims for an average of 5 a day. But in the 7 weeks leading up to the midterm elections, Donald Trump made 1,419 false or misleading claims, an average of 30 days a day. That's 30 lies out of Trump's blowhole each day. That adds up to a grand total of 6,420 claims through October 30th, the 649th day of his presidency. That, according to the fact checkers database that analyzes, categorizes, and tracks every suspect statement uttered by the president. Can you imagine having that job? Oh my God. I can't imagine anything much more depressing. For sure, Donald Trump has his greatest hits. 120 times he had falsely said that he passed the biggest tax cut in history. Yep. Nope. No, he didn't. That was a lie. What else? 80 times he has asserted that the U.S. economy is the best in history. Not true. 74 times he falsely said his border wall is already being built. Yeah. Well, Donald Trump took a break from his incessant rallies yesterday to give what was billed as a big announcement on asylum policies from the Roosevelt Room. Of course, it turned out to be more like his typical campaign speeches, at which time he said he would sign an executive order next week that would restrict asylum rules to close the door on Central America migrants now trekking here through Mexico. He also said, and look, I know Trump says a lot of hateful things and things you can't believe. Like, did he honestly say that? He said that U.S. troops he's sending to the border, you've heard, up to 5,200 of them he's sending, could fire on migrants if they threw rocks at the soldiers, something Pentagon rules do not allow, by the way. When asked by the press there if the military would open fire, he said, I hope not.
I hope not.
I hope not.
It's the military. I hope there won't be that. But I will tell you this. Anybody throwing stones, rocks, like they did to Mexico and the Mexican military, Mexican police, where they badly hurt police and soldiers of Mexico, we will consider that a firearm.
Oh, my God.
Because there's not much difference. When you get hit in the face with a rock, which, as you know, it was very violent a few days ago, very, very violent. That break-in, it was a break-in of a country. They broke into Mexico.
Okay, so he said that. He also tweeted it out that the troops could open fire on protesters who throw rocks because he has unilaterally decided that rock throwing is the same as shooting a gun. Well, check this out. Trump, hey, you fucking asshole, words have consequences. Under scrutiny from human rights organizations for firing on a crowd of protesters, the Nigerian army tweeted Trump from yesterday telling U.S. troops that any migrants throwing rocks should be handled as if they're armed with a rifle. The Nigerian army tweeted out Trump's statement to back up their firing live ammunition at protesters in Nigeria. Elections have consequences. So after that speech, Jake Tapper, CNN carried the speech. Fox did too, of course. MSNBC, I got to give him credit, did not. They said, we'll monitor it. And if he says anything worthwhile, we'll let you know. And it turned out it was just more of his stupid talking points. But anyway, CNN's Jake Tapper decided to just fact check the whole thing in real time.
Before we talk about this with the panel, I just a few fact checks. And honestly, I could spend 3 hours doing this, but just a few items here. First of all, the president said that asylum seekers, once they're picked up, they never show up in court. And then he said something about 3% of them show up in court. According to the Department of Homeland Security, 76% of people who are picked up and given a court date do show up to court. 76% do. So that was false. He talked about how there were an estimated 20 million, possibly 20 million undocumented immigrants in this country. Actually, according to his own administration, the number is about 12 million. He said that they had started building the wall. No, if you're talking about the concrete wall that President Trump had talked about on the campaign trail, no, they have not started building the wall. There has been some improvements to fencing and things along the border, but the wall itself that President Trump talked about, they have not started building that. He said Republicans were in unison when it comes to the issue of immigration. Actually, that's not true. In fact, so many Republicans in the House defected on a very conservative immigration bill. They couldn't get it through the House of Representatives. He had this whole thing about how the child separation policy that he got in so much hot water over was a continuation of the Obama policy, and then they ended it. That's not actually what happened. It gets technical, but let's just put it this way. The Obama's, the administration and the Bush administration had policies where children could be separated from their parents. It did happen. But then the Trump administration gave orders to exacerbate that policy, make it worse. And that's why there was the controversy that was ultimately reversed. Those are just a few of the small number of the issues that the president said talking about this that were not correct. There are many more, and I'm sure fact checkers are going to be hard at work.
There are many more because what was there? 6,420. Go get them. All right. So all that. And despite all of Trump's lies that have been cataloged and put out there and fact-checked by different fact-checking organizations, Donald Trump actually told ABC's Jonathan Karl that he really tries not to lie. He tries. He really tries.
Have you always
been
truthful?
Well, I try. I mean, I do try. I think you try, too. You say things about me that are not necessarily correct. I do try, and I always want to tell the truth. When I can, I tell the truth. I mean, sometimes it turns out to be where something happens that's different or
there's a change.
Oh, you're
such a fucking liar.
I always like to be truthful.
Yeah, you know what we say to that, Donald?
Bullshit.
Yeah, thank you. At a rally Wednesday in Missouri, the president called the concept of birthright citizenship, which we know is enshrined in the 14th Amendment, a crazy lunatic policy. So it's clear that Trump is doubling down on stoking immigration fears to shore up the GOP Senate majority, even if it ends up costing them the House. And true to form, rather than showing concern about the MAGA bomber and the synagogue shooter in Pittsburgh, Trump just complained that two maniacs. Tell me I lost this clip. Trump complained that two maniacs ruined, slowed down his momentum And now I lost my here it is. I lost the clip, but I've got it right here. So what he's complaining about are he called them out as maniacs. Two maniacs slowed the Republican campaign momentum. That's what he was upset about.
Numbers, tremendous numbers of Republicans are going out to vote. Now, we did have two maniacs stop a momentum that was incredible.
Ugh.
Because for 7 days, nobody talked about the elections. It stopped a tremendous momentum. More importantly, we have to take care of our people.
Oh, shut up. All right. Yes, this is all he cares about. Everything comes back to him. It's all about him. Not about the MAGA bomber, a guy who tried to blow up all of his political opponents. Not about the shooter who went into a synagogue. Jared and Ivanka had to convince him to say something about the Jewish people and to express his sympathy. It's just sickening. All right. On a totally different topic, Google employees worldwide briefly walked up off the job yesterday to protest sexual harassment and discrimination scandals. The protest organizers want Google to end forced arbitration in harassment cases, make data on gender, race, and ethnicity compensation gaps more transparent, good for them, and create a clear, inclusive process for reporting sexual misconduct safely and anonymously.
From Tokyo to New York to San Francisco, over 1,000 Google employees walked off the job Thursday, united in one mission.
Support women and to protest the way that this company has handled sexual harassment cases.
In New York, protesters carried signs, while in San Francisco, organizers took the mic to address the crowds. Reuters' Jane Lee was there.
Media have been strictly limited from the campus, so most of us are standing on the other side of the road here in front of the Google headquarters. Hundreds of Google employees have been streaming in to the courtyard here between the colorful Google buildings here in the headquarters of Mountain View. They're chanting, "Women's rights are workers' rights. Time is up. Time is up."
The protests, part of a campaign dubbed Google Walkouts for Real Change, that unfolded a week after an explosive New York Times report detailed allegations of sexual misconduct against top executives at the company, including the creator of the Android phone software, who was given a $90 million exit package. Shortly after the report was published, Google revealed that 48 people had been fired in the past 2 years over sexual misconduct allegations.
Time's up.
Thursday's protest includes a list of 5 demands by staff. The first, a call to end forced arbitration in cases of harassment and discrimination, a move that would make it possible for victims to sue.
So that happened, and we're getting there. All right, back to elections. Just because election day is Tuesday. There aren't many good things I can say about Congressman Steve King of Iowa, but he actually held a town hall meeting yesterday. Shocker. But things didn't go so well for him. He's finally getting called out for his white supremacist ways.
And the terrorist who committed this crime, he was quoted as saying, "They bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit back and watch our people get slaughtered." You, Steve King, have been quoted as saying, "We can't restore our civilization with other people's babies." You and the shooter both share an ideology that is fundamentally anti-immigration.
Do not associate me with that shooter.
Somebody's got thin skin.
I knew you were an ambusher when you walked in the room. But there's no basis for that, and you get no questions, no answers.
I was about to ask you what distinguishes your ideology.
We don't play these games here in Iowa.
I was about to ask you what distinguishes your ideology.
You crossed the line. It's not tolerable to accuse me to be associated with a guy that shot 11 people in Pittsburgh. I am a person who has stood with Israel from the beginning. That the length of that nation is the length of my life.
Supporting Israel has nothing to do with killing Jews.
Another word from you.
If you don't have a white supremacist worldview, then why did you travel to Austria to
meet
with a white supremacist organization?
I think he's given his answer. I think that his answer is his answer. Yes,
but do you identify as a white
supremacist? Sir, stop it.
Then why did you meet with a white supremacist organization in Austria?
Steve King. Hey, Steve. We can't handle the heat.
Guarding this door, lead this man out of the room.
Yeah.
So Steve King had the guy thrown out of his sparsely attended town hall meeting, by the way. Hey, Steve, if you can't handle the heat, get the fuck out of the kitchen. Well, we may send you out of the kitchen come Tuesday. Actually, the people of Iowa might. All right. I have some Oprah stuff here, but you already heard Oprah. We'll just relive this.
You get a vote and you
You get a vote. You get a vote. It cracks me up. But the bottom line is you all get a vote. And if you're in Georgia, you get your vote back. All right. Let's take a break. We'll check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report before we turn to Sally Cohn and learn about the opposite of hate. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
A Trump cabinet secretary was referred to the U.S. Justice Department for criminal investigation.
DOJ now investigating Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke.
Researchers from NOAA predict that we will see more of these mega storms as our oceans continue to warm.
New study finds even more buildup of heat in the oceans thanks to global warming. GM calls for an electric vehicle sales mandate. Plus,
this is a cry for help.
Teen climate activist in Sweden launches a kids strike to combat climate change.
All of that striking news and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They know the science is real. They're just making so much money they don't give a shit.
Well, that was direct and correct. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it looks like Ryan Zinke could be in trouble. I guess my only question here is, what took so long?
Well, Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is the subject of at least 18 known federal investigations into allegations of his ethics and other misconduct.
And yet he still hasn't been fired.
Correct. Now, the Inspector General of the Interior Department has reportedly referred at least one of those corruption investigations to the Justice Department. That's a sign that the federal government is considering a criminal investigation into Zinke's actions.
And yet he still hasn't been fired, and Congress hasn't even bothered to open an investigation of this guy?
Yes, well, it is a Republican majority Congress, so don't expect any action from them. CNN reports that the DOJ investigation may be about a real estate business deal between Zinke and the chairman of oil giant Halliburton. Startling new research finds a massive buildup of heat in the ocean. The Washington Post reports that the world's oceans have been soaking up far more excess heat in recent decades than scientists realized, as much as 60% more heat every year. That means more powerful storms, but also suggests that scientists may have underestimated the amount of warming we will see in coming decades, and that the planet could warm at an even faster rate than projected, giving governments even less time to shift away from fossil fuels and prepare for climate change impacts.
So the scientists were wrong again.
Sort of.
Get it right, scientists.
Utility Dive reports that U.S. auto giant General Motors has called for a national electric vehicle sales mandate in public comments to the Department of Transportation. A national sales mandate would require car makers to sell a minimum number of electric vehicles every year. GM said it would get more than 7 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030, but environmental groups derided GM's proposal as, quote, trying to gaslight the American people, because earlier this year, GM joined other auto companies in pushing the Trump administration to roll back the Obama administration's updated mileage and emission standards that would have effectively achieved the same goal of promoting electric vehicle sales.
You know, nothing is stopping GM from making electric cars and selling them, just saying, GM.
But some good news. U.S. airline Delta has announced it plans to join other major airlines in ditching plastic straws and stirrers on board all of its flights, and said that it will stop wrapping its amenity kits in plastic to help fight the scourge of plastic pollution.
So there's that.
Yeah, but it won't start until next year. The good news, however, is that major companies are finally acknowledging the epic stupidity of digging up fossil fuels that have been buried for millions of years to make a plastic item used for only a few seconds that pollutes the environment for hundreds of years. Finally, at a rally to get out the vote in Nevada last week, President Obama called the midterm elections on November 6th the most important elections we have yet lived through.
This November's elections are more important than any I can remember in my lifetime, and that includes when I was on the ballot. The stakes are high.
That's not an exaggeration when it comes to the accelerating impacts of dangerous man-made climate change. And a young climate activist in Sweden agrees. At a climate rally in Helsinki over the weekend, Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg launched a kids' strike to boycott school to push politicians to move quickly on climate. Thunberg urged adults, like those in the U.S. who are old enough to vote in the midterm elections, to think seriously about the consequences of the choices they make today.
The future of all the coming generations rests on your shoulders. What you do now, we children can't undo in the future. So please, treat the crisis as the crisis it is and give us a future. Our lives are in your hands.
Yeah, any excuse not to go to school. Wish I had thought of that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
These are the sounds of crushed souls, the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio, and you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right. Well, I'm back. Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. I need to do a quick shout out to the people in the YouTube chat room. YouTube is being particularly generous today with their Super Chat donations. There's a way on YouTube that you can donate to whoever is doing the show. It's called Super Chat. And because it's my birthday on Sunday, a number of the chatters are donating. And I thank you so much for that. And for everyone who, donates to this show, I truly, truly thank you. Can't thank you enough because that's how we stay alive. All right, I'm going to see if this will work. We're trying to get Sal. Oh, I think it's going to work. Sally Cohn on the line. Sally Cohn is an old friend. We met years and years ago at a Netroots Nation, and I've watched her become a big star. I first spent years on Fox as a commentator, a contributor, and these days she's on CNN. But more importantly, she's got a brand new book out. It's called The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally Cohn, you there?
I am.
There
Hello.
She is. Hello. How are you?
State of the world aside.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's all relative. But yes, I'm fine. I'm good. How are you?
I'm the same. I'm hanging in there. I'll tell you, I haven't seen you in a long time. It's been a rough couple of years. Like a lot of people, and I've been honest about this with my listeners, and if I hadn't, they would have known something was up. I went through something of a breakdown. It really fucked me up. It's the only way I can put it. And to the point where I'm just now starting to emerge from it. And so hopefully Tuesday, people will do the right thing and get out and vote, and we'll start on the healing process on the way back. But I got to tell you, Sally, I read your book. I finished it last week. I was reading it. I was neck deep in this thing as the MAGA bomber was sending out bombs, as the shooter in Pittsburgh was shooting up the synagogue, as the shooter in Kentucky killed two black people after he couldn't get into the black church. I mean, this was a week filled with hate. And I thought, I guess there's a reason I'm reading this book right now, The Opposite of Hate. But I'll tell you, I said this to the listeners a little while ago, I feel that maybe there's something missing in me because I hate that MAGA bomber. I hate the shooters. I really hate Donald Trump. And I don't feel badly about it. Should I?
Well, I mean, look, there's many layers to that question, mm-hmm. right? So first and foremost, people ask all the time, like, oh, do I have to not hate Donald Trump? And, you know, look, my answer is, like, first of all, it doesn't make anything better to it. Maybe makes things worse. We could get into that in a second. But my bigger issue is not how you feel about Trump. It's how you feel about the people who voted for him. Uh-huh. And they're the ones, right, who I am concerned with reaching, changing, moving mm-hmm. the needle on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, for me, there's a moral and there's a practical dimension to this. So morally, right, I think, okay, if I say I believe in the equal humanity and dignity of all people, if I say that's why I'm a progressive, why I stand for and fight for the things I do, then do I really mean all people? Do mm-hmm. I even mean those people who would deny my rights and humanity, who, you know, like I'm gonna insist on their rights and humanity, no matter what. Not right. because they earned it, not because they right, but because they're human beings.
Right.
And so there's that moral dimension to it.
Right.
There's also a moral piece here, which is, you know, look, we can't let our opponents define our values.
True.
Right. So if they behave badly, then we behave badly. Well, then we're giving them way more power than they deserve. So there's that dimension. Then there's the practical piece, which is, look, practically speaking, hate has never solved hate.
True.
You know, more hate has never been the answer to hate, just like more injustice has never been
right.
the answer to injustice. And the simple question is, you know, look, I get it. You're mad. We should be mad. We should be angry that people voted for Trump in 2016. The question is, do we want them to do it again in 2020?
No, God, no. We want them to learn.
I don't know anyone who's ever been hated into changing their minds.
True. And someone in the chat room just said, hate never destroys hate. Only love does. And you know, let's go into the book a little bit, because I'm telling you, and I really loved the book. I read the whole thing, and I often don't read the entire book of people that I'm interviewing because I don't have time. But you really grabbed me with this, and some of the stories you tell are mind altering. In that, you know, you went to Rwanda, and you met a guy whose entire family had been assassinated, had been just killed all around him, and he went on to actually befriend the people who slaughtered his family and to feel love. I mean I give him a lot of credit. I don't think I'm that magnanimous.
No I don't either, and to be honest, that chapter, that you know, story, traveling and hearing those stories, having that experience, was really it was hard. It was really hard for me.
I'll bet.
I think, when we think about hate and injustice and violence, I don't think there's a greater manifestation than widespread genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Rwanda was, the fastest genocide in human history.
Mm-hmm.
800,000 people slaughtered in 100 days. Ugh. And what's, I think, easy for a lot of us to do who, you know, are white or live in the West or right, is to say, like, oh, well, that's Rwanda. That's something that could happen there that can never happen here. And kind of write it off and otherize it in extreme ways, which is a form of otherizing in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
We only are able to do because we put people in boxes and put distance between ourselves and them. But, you know, there's something that a philosopher I talked about in the book said when I was thinking about Rwanda. She said, look, there aren't mass atrocities because of a handful of psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there aren't enough psychopaths statistically in Rwanda or Germany or Serbia or you name it.
Or the United States.
The reason we have mass atrocities is because masses of people participate in them.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who, by and large, this is the hard thing to really reckon with, is by and large, they're people who woke up, you know, days before thinking they were good people,
right,
who think afterwards they're good people, and who often, during the actual atrocities, believe themselves to be good people. And, you know, what's hard, I think, is to see that we're all capable of that.
Yeah.
That is a human condition. It is not, you know, confined to any, you know, religion or continent or whatever. And I think it makes it even harder to grapple with the implications of what we're going through here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right. And that was only one of many examples. You traveled the world to talk to people who are embroiled in centuries-old conflicts, the Palestinians and the Israelis. That's a no-win situation. I mean, and as an American Jew, I have sympathy for the people of Israel because I do think they, you know, they deserve their place. But the Palestinians also deserve a place. And the hostilities between the two just that's not a way to get to peace. But you found what did you find there? People willing to hate the others just because they are others?
Oh, I mean, completely. But look, again, like, we do that here too.
Yeah,
I mean, that shouldn't be that surprising,
right,
to us. You see someone in their MAGA hat, and you formed a whole set of ideas,
absolutely,
about them and who they are, and you've painted them with a broad stroke, and you've made them only just this identity or this idea or what. And then that's effectively what hate is. It's when,
right,
we, you know, demean and dehumanize people because of who they are or what they believe, and do so in a consequential, categorical kind of way.
Right. And in the aftermath of the shooting at the synagogue last weekend, we can all, I mean, as an American Jew, I'm a secular Jew. I don't practice any religion. I'm an atheist. But I've never felt such hatred coming at me. I mean, I saw it during Charlottesville, watching those people march, and said, this comes from, you know, a history lesson. This is not supposed to be happening in 21st century America. But it just seems to be getting worse and worse. The Southern Poverty Law Center said that the increase in anti-Semitic attacks and incidents rose by some ungodly number in the last year. And it's all the influence of Trump. It's an influence of hatred. And I don't know. I see some great examples of people who are, again, bigger hearted people than I am, who, when they're faced with this ugly hatred coming their way, are still able to rise above it. I see the hatred, and I want to rid us of these people. I want to smack some sense into them, and I want to rid the planet of them, because we shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff.
No, I know. And listen, it's not to invalidate in any way, shape, or form that impulse,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is a human, and in ways that you intend it to be, a humane impulse, right?
Right.
The problem goes back to that moral and practical conundrum I raised, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is, morally, I can't find a way to rationalize hating people because they hate. And,
because they hate you?
To use your example of Israel-Palestine,
mm-hmm,
look, it, one of the reasons it's such a potent example is because it seems so intractable. I mean, they actually, like, there's language for these things.
Right.
Scholars call them intractable conflicts for a reason, right?
Right.
So it seems so stuck in so many ways. And you know, if you come at it from one of the two conventional perspectives, right, you tend to think 99.9% of the blame is on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And what's truly fascinating is you can find very normal people. Like, we're not talking about, you know, fringe crazies. We're talking,
mm-hmm,
about very normal people on both sides who believe that 99% of the blame comes from the other side.
Sure.
And that they are, by the way, intrinsically hateful, not just situationally, not that they are products of context, environment, history, et cetera, but they are intrinsically hateful. Mm-hmm. There are people on both sides who believe that. Now, they can't both be right.
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 And what we also know is, if we look at that example and we use it to be instructive, you know, people are using that sort of they started it philosophy of hate
right.
to justify and excuse a whole other set of hateful actions and behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't listen at a certain point, and this is, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm also not saying it's fair. It doesn't feel fair for a reason. It's not, right? Like, it is not fair that in the face of, you know, anti-Semitic hatred or homophobia, mm-hmm. I, as a Jewish lesbian, have to be the bigger person. You're right. It's not fair.
No.
And it's a choice, by the way. I don't actually have to. But right. What I do know is, and it's from the stories in the book as well as from the research, that is actually the only way that people have changed. That when more hate is thrown at them, people in that hateful, defensive crouch just dig in.
Yeah.
And the stories of how people have changed, the ex-neo-Nazis, mm-hmm. the ex-terrorists, the stories of how people have changed is when the people that they were trained or raised to hate showed them an unexpected grace or kindness. This is missionary work. This isn't for everyone.
Right, right.
But like, I at least feel like, look, you got three choices here. The first is do no harm.
Yes.
Like, all right.
Okay.
You know, don't try not to add hate to the fire. You
gotcha.
Know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, that would be great. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, like, do nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, do good works and do good things in the world, but like, it, you know, try to just ignore, like, not engage people who are hateful and right. And then the third option is really to do this. You know, it's sort of it is work that requires grace. I think it's why it's important to do it as allies, right? It's a lot easier for, you know, it's a lot easier for me as a Jew to speak out about Islamophobia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has a certain power and persuasion when I do so. And so, right, like that's where it's important to be an ally. But either way, it's like, yeah, it sucks. It's not fair. It's also the only way to change it.
Yes, and it's hard. And I guess it takes a bigger person than I am. I got to ask you, Sally Cohn is with us, and we're talking about her book, The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. And the title spurs conversation, certainly spurs thought. We know the opposite of love is not hate. It's indifference. We learned that from Elie Wiesel. But the opposite of hate is not love, and I don't think it's indifference either. And you have an interesting way of putting what the opposite of hate is. Like, can you explain what you believe the opposite of hate is?
Yeah, I don't think it's love, right? Because you don't have to love someone to stop hating them.
Right.
You don't. You're welcome, by the way. So, like, I'm not saying you gotta go love the haters. You don't have to like them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You're welcome. But what we do have to do is understand that there's this fundamental connection as human beings that we have. By the way, that's not to downplay or dampen the significance of our differences and our disagreements. I'm not the kind of person who thinks those are inherently divisive. I actually think that understanding, celebrating, and appreciating our differences and disagreements is part of what makes us great as country, great as people, and helps us actually connect with one another and each other's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, we're all human beings. And, you know, look, when you and I we haven't talked in a while, but I'm assuming you're still a hearty supporter of immigrant rights, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So when someone comes to this country, for whatever the reasons, they're fleeing economic or political violence, they're fleeing personal or political violence, or they're just fleeing economic hardship. They're looking for opportunity, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they did so through fully legal means or through unauthorized means or some gray area in between, they came on a visa, then they overstayed their visa or whatever. I assume you believe they have certain unalienable rights and a dignity and humanity and should be treated accordingly,
mm-hmm.
as as human beings of equal worth and dignity.
Okay.
Regardless of whether they quote unquote earned it. More importantly, if they're rich, if they're poor, if they're like, it's not like we should treat the rich immigrants better than the poor immigrants, right?
Right.
Okay, because people, we believe, have this fundamental condition. They have fundamental rights and dignity and whatever. And not because they earned it, not because they behaved a certain way, right?
Yeah.
But because they breathe.
Right.
But because they breathe. And so that's got to include our opponents. It's got to. Or we're hypocrites.
Well, many of us are.
I needed a laugh. That was great. You're right.
Good. Yeah,
many of us are. Oh, my God. That was the most wonderfully honest thing anyone said to me in a long time. Thank
Glad
you.
I could help.
Well, it's true.
I mean,
you're exactly right.
Yeah. A hypocrite is a definition in the dictionary of Republican these days. You know, sometimes it changes over time, but we see hypocrisy every day. So that's not unusual.
But sometimes, yes, a lot of the time it's them. Sometimes it's us.
Yes.
And here's the thing. Look, I happen to believe that one side does it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And one side did it, historically speaking, and generally these days first.
Mm-hmm.
And I also happen to believe in this moment that this is hard. And again, we're not talking about the extremes. Like, I'm not talking about the guy who sent pipe bombs.
Right.
I'm not feeling like I have to be generous and kind toward him at all. I am feeling like to assume that every single person who voted for Trump feels the exact same way as the person who sent the pipe bombs
right.
is
true. But I can bring it down to a real life example. You worked for years at Fox, and you got to know some of the people there who aren't, you say, as heinous as their on screen personas. You actually happen to like Sean Hannity. He wrote a blurb for your book. I happen to think he's a heinous example of a human being. I happen to think he's just awful. He lies. He's vindictive. I think he's ugly inside and out. I think he's a bad person. I won't say I hate him because I don't know him personally. But I have a feeling if I knew him, I'd probably hate him.
I hate to tell you, I have a feeling if you knew him, you probably wouldn't hate him, but look,
I'd hate him even more because he's a fucking hypocrite. If he's really a good guy and he says the things he says on the air, then he's a hypocrite.
I think there's a difference between being politically good and being interpersonally good. I aspire to and hope more of us can aspire to both.
Yeah.
Right. And I actually think one of the and I touched on this in the book, although I didn't get into it as much as I could have. I do think one of the sort of fundamental truths that increasingly seems to be more the case, again, not 100%, but is that conservatives are, I don't know if you read this piece in The Guardian, the reporter who went to Trump rallies for a week. And, you know, he said it was almost uncanny, the kinds of like lovely conversations and how nice everyone was and how like the atmosphere was so sweet and loving and supportive. Uh-huh. And then people would say these horrid things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is, I think, it's not to conflate the two. And it's not to say, by the way, that like, oh, well, we should just be civil. Like, bear in mind, when our politicians were civil, they were enacting some incredibly hateful laws and policies
That's
against
true.
Certain communities. They were just doing it like they were being nice to each other. So that's not everything. There's two different aspects: interpersonal sort of kindness or respect, and then actual political equity and justice. And I think both are like those are the sort of two branches of radical kindness. And that they unfortunately realize that often conservatives are nicer to people in specific,
mm-hmm.
But meaner to humanity in general.
Huh. Well, maybe they're just better at being phony.
And often liberals, well, no, but you know what? Here's the thing. Like, this is one of those, when they talk about, oh, you know, well, we should just not have public benefits and instead, like, churches would take care
right.
of people.
Like, oh, come on.
I actually think they mean it. They mean it. Like, they really, like they, there's a certain like the love the sin or hate the sin thing. Like I used to also think that was phony BS. It turns out like they mean it, right? But they're not going to like, right? There's a certain interpersonal niceness and even friendliness and welcoming and a congregate, you know, comes sort of direct line from the church and sort of all that. But then the policies are incredibly atrocious and mean to people. And by the way, we could like list the number of progressive politicians or talking heads or TV anchors who are interpersonally, you know, not very nice people, but who like politically were on the exact same page. So I'd like to see people be both. I don't excuse one for the other. And I guess here's the last thing I'll say. What does attacking Hannity get me? When I was on Fox, and even still when I do his radio show, my point was never to change Sean Hannity's mind. I'm not going to.
Right.
Now, I would point out, you might remember after the 2012 election, when he started talking in favor of immigration reform and a path to citizenship. That was friggin' huge.
Yeah,
and I'd give my left arm if he did that again right now. So I'm not going to discount the possibility of it. But the more important thing is that everyone who watches Sean Hannity isn't Sean Hannity.
True.
And if I say these hyperbolic, nasty things about him and paint him as just the worst things he's ever said and done, what the heck am I achieving? Do I feel bad? I'll be honest. I feel bad about myself when I'm mean. So I'm not sure I feel good. Like, it's not catharsis.
Right. True.
And I'm just getting, I'm literally driving people toward him.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of trying to get them to listen to other perspectives. So again, that's, I don't want to overly harp on that sort of pragmatic piece, but you know, look, I'm an organizer. I believe in change.
Right.
I'm change possible.
And I want to get back to the opposite of hate. And I think people need to read the book to get the concept of what you're saying. But we've only got about a minute left or two. So the opposite of hate is not love. It's not indifference.
Oh, did I not answer?
We never got there.
It's connection.
Connection.
It's connection. It's understanding how we. It's understanding that fundamental tie we have to each other as human beings, and that we all have that right to dignity and equality and justice, regardless of who we are, what we've done, whether we quote unquote earned it or not, that is a condition of existence, not just, you know, your tribe or your group or your wealth or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I know you've got a young daughter. Do you have these conversations with her about the concepts of love and hate? And because, I mean, hate is such a strong emotion, and unfortunately, we're all feeling it these days. I feel hated just from what happened at that synagogue, even though, you know, I mean.
Oh, I mean, we live in Brooklyn. We just had a.
It happened to a synagogue, you know, in Brooklyn.
Synagogue.
Yep.
Are you gone?
No, I'm here. I'm here. Sally, can you hear me? Uh-oh. I think Sally lost me, but I'm still here. Sally? Oh, I think we lost Sally Cohn. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. We've only got like a minute left. I'm going to hang up on her, and I'm going to call her back and see if that works. We'll see. You know, Skype worked for us for a little while anyway. And again, now we are just about out of time anyway. We'll see if Sally will pick up again.
The person whom you're trying to reach.
All right, she's gone. So I'll just say Sally Cohn, again, she's an activist. She's an organizer. She's a columnist. She's written in lots of places. And the new book is called The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. And we got most of it out. And what she said is, the opposite of hate is the beautiful and powerful reality of how we are all fundamentally linked and equal as human beings. The opposite of hate is connection. And I think there she is. Sally. Hello. And she still can't hear me. That's really weird because she was there. We were fine. I didn't touch anything. And she can't hear me again.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what happened.
And there you
are. Hi again. Here I am.
Hi again. Oh.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
I'll finish that thought quickly.
Okay.
Which is we just had a synagogue, you know, defaced with, you know, anti-Semitic slurs.
Yes, we did.
A few blocks away from our home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my partner used the phrase hate crime, and my daughter says, what's that? And, you know, yes, of course, you have to talk to your kids about these things. And part of it is helping to raise them to be more loving and kind and inclusive. And by the way, in our house, that means also not hating you know, talking about hating Trump or hating Trump supporters or whatever. Because we want to raise our kid to be better.
I hear you. I hear you.
Better
well,
than him.
I recommend the book very highly, The Opposite of Hate. It'll help you be more magnanimous. Sally Cohn, it's great talking to you as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, have a great weekend, everyone. Remember, again, Sunday is my birthday. What you can do for me other than donating to the program is vote. Get out and vote, please. I'll take my present on Tuesday.